today. We'll kind of see how this plays out, but I want to sort of keep Thich Nhat Hanh close, as it were, just in honoring his passing. And I know some of you, Gwen, I know, are a student of his and wanting to just honor. He was definitely an early, I wouldn't call him a teacher of mine, but definitely in when I was first starting this path, I was deeply influenced by him for sure. And as I said, I had a couple different opportunities to sit with him. The family retreat that he does in Colorado, and when he used to come to Lake Merritt and do the walking. And then in conjunction with that, really, and this is an ongoing question for me, or pursuit of how do we work with this mind of ours, and watching when we get tripped up by it, and when we are really supported by the way the mind works. So to start with, I want to share another piece from Thich Nhat Hanh. And this is, definitely this was an early, initially in coming to the practice, this was a teaching that I came across, and I'm sure it's going to be very familiar to many, many of you in his teachings of interbeing. And he writes, if you are a poet, you will see clearly that there is a cloud float, if you're holding a piece of paper, that you will see very clearly that there is a cloud floating in this sheet of paper. Without a cloud, there would be no rain. Without rain, the trees cannot grow. Without trees, we cannot make paper. The cloud is essential for the paper to exist. If the cloud is not here, the sheet of paper cannot be here either. So when we say that the cloud and the paper interbeing is a word that is not in the dictionary yet, but if we combine the prefix inter with the verb to be, we now have this new verb, interbe. Without a cloud and the sheet of paper, they inter are. If we look into the sheet of paper ever more deeply, we can see sunshine in it. If the sunshine is not there, the forest cannot grow. In fact, nothing can grow. Even we cannot grow without this sunshine. And so we know that this sunshine is also in this piece of paper. The paper and the sunshine inter are. If we continue to look, we can see the logger who cut the tree and brought it to the mill to be transformed into this paper, and we see the wheat. We know the logger cannot exist without his daily bread, and therefore the wheat that became his bread is also in the sheet of paper, and the logger's father and mother are in it too. When we look this way, we can see that without all of these things, the sheet of paper cannot exist. Looking ever more deeply, we can see that we are in it also. This is not difficult to see when we look at the sheet of paper. The sheet of paper is part of our perception. Your mind is in here and mine also. So we can say that everything in here with the sheet of paper, you cannot point out one thing that is not here: time, space, earth, rain, minerals in the soil, sunshine, the cloud, rivers, heat, everything coexists with the sheet of paper. That is why I think the word interbe should be in the dictionary. Suppose we try to return one of these elements to a source. Suppose we return sunshine to the sun. Do you think the sheet of paper will be possible? No. If we return the logger to his mother, we have no sheet of paper either. The fact is, the sheet of paper is made up only of non-paper elements. And it goes on. But this beautiful invitation to see the world and our place in it. And I was thinking, I think, Allison, a couple of weeks ago, you asked, like, how do we deal with loneliness in this time of, this is paraphrasing you some, of this continued COVID weirdness of isolation and social distancing, and when is it okay to come together and when not? And this practice of really looking at the sheet of paper, or Martin Luther King Jr. has a quote about in this, his breakfast and his cup of coffee, all the many people that were involved in getting the beans and the coffee such that he could sit down and have coffee. How incredibly interconnected we all are. We do not exist outside of the context in which we are born. And I think it's Daniel Winnicott, the child psychologist, has said, so there's really no concept of an infant by itself. So there's no infant without the mother. There's a direct correlation, one and the other. They can't be separate in the beginning. And this way of, can we shift our perception of ourself out of me and mine and my problems, my issues and what's going on for me, and being so incredibly self-referential, which happens, to really understand, again, our place in the family of things, that line from David Wyatt, and the capacity of when we can exercise that perception, which is really what it is, of being inclusive of the world in our own experience, in the cup of tea, in the water that we drink. God only knows the myriad of people that were involved in putting this computer together such that I can have it in the tech support and all of the people that are involved in my meaning, sort of how I, what all the things that I undertake in the course of a day. It allows us to feel into a sense of community and belongingness if we can stay open to that. What can get in the way of that perception is how we think, right? The ways in which we can be hijacked by certain members of our inner committee that are less than reliable, or less than good intention. That great quote from Annie Lamott, you know, my mind is like a bad neighborhood. I try not to go there alone. And part of these teachings really invite us to kind of get a sense of what is this neighborhood like? What's the movie that we're watching in the mind? How much do we allow to dominate our moods, our orientations to the world, how we are, how we show up, our beliefs in ourselves, by what movie's playing, because it changes, right? There can be days we wake up and really excited and exuberant, it's going to be a great day, and then the next day, without that much actually having changed, it's like, oh my God, this is terrible. And it's sort of the ebbs and flows of our moods, but how much do we believe what we think? Yeah. And again, I never get tired of this wonderment of our capacity to actually watch how we think and being able to make choices. Is this reliable? Does this make sense? And understanding in this image, you know, that within each of us is an inner committee, and we do hear different voices. We can hear the voices of the art teacher that told us we sucked at art, or the math teacher who was like, you are so stupid, or our mother who said, you're so great, or the mother that said, you can't do anything. You know, these voices that we can maybe perhaps trace back to somebody outside of us that become sort of so familiar to us as to become our own. And part of this practice can be really understanding, what is that voice? And being able to kind of trace it back and understand, I don't actually have to believe this. I don't actually have to believe any of it because it's all made up, right? The machinations of the mind are kind of endless, very strong, but ethereal. A thought comes and it goes. And that challenge of watch a thought, see where it starts, see where it ends, is challenging, right? Particularly if it's a thought we have all the time. And it's like, oh yeah, I know it. This thought I have 1,000 times. Oh, there was a quote, I'm sorry, I don't have it, about sort of words and the amount of words of thinking. And it's something like, in the course of a day, I'm kind of going to make this up, but I think it's accurate. It's something like, in the course of a day, our thoughts generate something like 4 million words a day. What? It's staggering. And so much that we're unaware of, just sort of this background noise of comments of this is nice, do this, don't forget, what about this, da, 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 da. And a lot of that is filtered out that we're not actually conscious of it, but it's still going on, this narrating of our lives, and you should do that, and you should do this, and whoa, it can be so loud inside our minds sometimes, right? And being able to reflect upon, wow, it is really loud. There's a whole cacophony of voices, and what's actually true? Drop into the body, to come out of the mind. That image of sort of take the elevator down, come into the body. This is what's true. The body does not lie, right? And a way of kind of resettling ourselves in the body, such to be able to then again look at what's going on in the mind and be like, wow, there's really a lot happening here. And in that flexing of that muscle of, wow, there's a lot happening here. How amazing. Because we've created that distance. Yeah, to observe it. And we're not all in the middle and entangled into it. You know, how do we untangle, Gautama, how do we untangle the tangle? You know, that is our mind, that can be our lives. And one of those ways to untangle the tangle is through discernment. Yeah. And being able to discern, oh, this is sort of the thinking mind run amok. And if, and mix some metaphors here, if we kind of think of the thinking mind as like a tapestry, well, what's this thread? Okay, this thread is the voice of the art teacher or the math teacher or whomever as a way of being able to say, I don't actually want to subscribe. I don't want to believe that anymore. I didn't actually like it when I was in fourth grade and I heard that about my art skills, but I really don't want to be continuing to listen to it anymore. And I have a choice. And it can sometimes feel like, no, I don't. I'm totally at the mercy of my thinking. And it's like, well, actually, sweetie, the only thing that we have control over in this life is our mind. And that is so not something we are taught, right? As kids, I never took that class when I was a kid. I'm like, how do we manage this mind of ours that can spin us so out of control such that we feel so out of control, or that spinning sensation when we can be perseverating and the mind is spinning and we can feel kind of groundless, or that we're floating. And this piece about the groundlessness, the spinning, that we're sort of in this vortex, can be really unpleasant. And just sort of because we're so caught up in trying to believe or figuring a way out. And what if we kind of drop into the groundlessness that is the spinning mind? And I was listening to in Pema Chodron's book, Welcoming the Unwelcome. And she speaks about this groundlessness in a little bit different way, but I think it's similar in this, as she was speaking about it in the book, as listening to it, which is why I'm using that languaging. What she was pointing to in the groundlessness is those moments, and I'm sure we've all had them, when the world changes in a heartbeat. She quotes Joan Didion's book, which I did not read, The Year of Magical Thinking, and she writes about Joan Didion. She and her husband are at their daughter's in the hospital. They come home, they have dinner, and her husband has a heart attack, but suddenly, and her whole life changes. And this moment that I'm sure each of us could reflect upon, this moment when everything changed, that when I was married and my daughter was three, my then husband, he got a diagnosis of ALS. And we were told you have 5 years to live. And it was like, oh, everything changed. Right. But in that moment of when everything changes, Pema Chodron brings in like that groundlessness is when we realize everything I thought changed, which is like everything I thought I had made up, because it can change in an instant. Right. And it's a little bit of a tenuous leap to sort of the groundlessness that can come from the mind spinning. But what I'm hoping I can make that it feels true is sort of the connection between the power of what happens when we believe all the machinations and fictionalizing and narrating of our lives, either what we're caught about and spinning or worrying about, or the constructions of labeling and naming, when all of that is made up. And this gets into the what can be kind of the confusing teachings around form and emptiness. And then Pema Chodron was talking about this in that book I referenced. And then I listened to a podcast with Ezra Klein and Ruth Ozaki. I think I'm saying her name right, and forgive me that I'm not, if I'm not. I think that's it. Of this idea of form and emptiness. And when can we allow ourselves to drop into a sense of emptiness? In Ruth Ozaki's talk, she was speaking about her way of holding form and emptiness is just the ocean and the wave. That the wave forms, and she talks about the waves like, woo, I'm this great wave, aren't I great? And then ultimately the wave falls back into the ocean, right? And that's much like each of our lives. We're born, we have this life that is both tragic and amazing and complicated and wonderful, and then we go back into the earth, right? So we are that way that we come out of something, we have our experience, and then we go back into something. And being able to have this analogy of the wave that comes out of the ocean goes back into the ocean. There is a wave. People surf it. We can see it. But it's actually not separate from the ocean itself. And what an amazing possibility to consider moving in our own lives in that way. I'm separate from the world that is around me, but no more separate than the wave is from the ocean. And when we bring that to the level, the more narrow level of the thinking mind, all those thoughts, what is it? You know, if again, that analogy of the wave comes out of the ocean, falls back into the ocean, our lives, we're born and then we die. The way in which I think about my life, my daughter's life, whatever's happening in the world. It's kind of scary. They're thoughts that are in of themselves insubstantial. We can do amazing things with our minds. We can come together here. We can read things. We can engage in conversation. There's an incredible beauty and power and creativity that comes with the mind. Yes, of course. In undertaking meditation, it's not to stop the thinking mind, right? It's just being able to watch it. And that line about the mind makes a terrible master, but an incredible servant. And being able to start to understand the nuances of what's going on in this mind of mine, and when does it sort of derail me into the rabbit hole of I'm not good enough, or my life sucks, or all of these different ways the mind can go. And when is it more in alignment with our life force and vitality and creativity, such that it is this amazing tool at our disposal to create a life worth living, to create the life that we want to lead. Knowing we can have ideas about how we think our life should go. It usually doesn't work out that way. Okay, that's not a fault. It's just that's the human realm. We're born into this realm that is suffering. Things don't really work out the way we think we should, the way they think things should. Marriages that we think are going to last don't. People get sick when we don't think they're going to. Jobs end. You know, our health is not as good as it would like to be. You know, there's all these different ways that life plays with us, that there are intrusions of like, I have this plan. It's like, that's great. You can have that plan, which is an idea in your mind. Don't hold on too tight, because it's not likely to unfold that way, which again can be this amazing gift of being able to play with this idea of form and emptiness of like, well, wait, if we are really just this wave that comes up and passes, does it really matter? All this machinations of the mind and the 2 a.m. worrying about what's going to happen. Is it actually true? Can we develop enough capacity, trust, faith in our abilities to be able to watch like, wow, that's that worry. That's that spinning out. I don't believe it. I can be orient the mind somewhere else when there's a lot of energies in the mind to be able to hear, do this, practice with these metaphrases. May I be happy? May I be peaceful? May I be healthy? Like giving the mind a job. In Ethan Cross's book, which I have not fully read again, but I've listened to some talks, and I do have the book. Researching psychologist at the University of Michigan and has a center of which I forget the name, but working with tools of the word. His book is called Chatter, and working with the chattering mind. And I think we can all know that's why when you, if you, the chatting that can happen back when we used to go to parties, talk with people that we didn't really know, but the sort of the chatter that can happen, chatting that can happen out in the world. But the chatting that can happen internally, the chatter of the mind that's just like constantly ruminating about the same thing, like I know this and I'm still having this conversation again, or the chattering about something's going to go wrong, or the 2 a.m. mind that can really have a big stage to be worried about something. And in his book, sort of walking through different ways of, one, identifying chatter as distinct from wisdom, as distinct from inner knowing, and these are my words, not his, but in our own mind, when we really allow ourselves to watch the patterning, the tone, the quality of the thinking, and being able to discern when is it in that chattering box of like, oh dear Lord, I'm having that thought again. And when is it more embodied and more connected, more heartfelt? Then there's that I would place it under the heading of sort of the inner knowing and the wisdom. One of the benefits of this practice is being able to discern between those two. They're not the same. Energetically, at least in my experience, they don't feel the same. And I'm so happy I can at times understand the difference. One of the skills he offers, I won't get through all of them, but one thing he talks about, Ethan Cross, is this way of when the mind is spinning out about something to use the third person. Like if I'm spinning out about, say, this talk, like, oh my God, this talk is going to be terrible. It's not going to make any sense, blah, blah, blah. And then one way I can change the self-talk is, it's going to sound well, it's going to sound how it's going to sound, judging mine, of like, Grace, you're going to do a great job. It's going to be a really good talk. And it's funny, even as I say that, it's like, oh, settle down. And he talks about the Solomon paradox, that Solomon, the biblical figure, could give great advice out in the world. But in his own life was a big mess. He couldn't make a decision to save his life for him personally, but out, but he did a great job out in the world. And we see this in public figures, that they do great out in the world, but maybe not, they're not so great at making decisions personally. And this notion of where it's easier to give advice somewhere else, it's much harder to do it for ourselves. So he and all of his researchers have sort of flipped it of like, well, talk to yourself as if you're somebody else. You know, that one, it's distancing. If I start using my name, Grace, it's going to be great. It's going to be okay. It is soothing. And that way that it kind of flexes that muscle of the distance, but also it just changes how we can approach it. And they've done all these studies about the how it does shift into something to kind of play with when we feel ourselves caught or spinning, to be able to talk to yourself using your name. And he's really clear, like, don't do this out loud, because then people will think you're crazy or very narcissistic. But being able to say, you, it's going to be okay, or sort of using those words out of the third party. So I might stop there and then let's do an exercise. But so, and I ask you to close your eyes. And again, those are a lot of words that I was just sharing. So drop into the body for a moment and just check in. And then if you kind of to pull in Annie Lamont's line about my mind is like a bad neighborhood. It might be true on some days. It might be true. Might not be true. In this moment, again, if you just sort of listen into the different voices in the head, is there a primary narrator, a primary commentator, a primary judge? What's the most predominant voice you hear, not mine, within your own head? Yeah. And I don't know if it's from family systems work or exactly where, but this notion of the inner committee. And if we just take a moment to kind of consider, who are the members of the inner committee in our minds? And this is certainly an exercise that would benefit from more than 3 or 4 minutes. So it's just a quick touch in. But if you were to allow yourself some playfulness here, to consider, to fill out that who's sitting at the conference table, as it were, for lack of a better word, it's the picnic table. That's a better image of the inner committee. You know, is it a parent's voice? Is there a teacher voice? If there is a critical voice, who was that? And again, to be playful, it doesn't actually have to be a mother or a teacher or a father figure, but allow yourself to kind of get creative and playful with who are the voices that show up. Give them a form. Give them a name. The younger parts of ourselves, the wiser parts of ourselves, the older, wiser part. Part that really knows. Part that gets super caught by things, the inner seventh grader. Again, just to take a few minutes to kind of playfully fill in, who are these inner committee members that may debate or hold forth, hold court? Whether it's the 2 a.m. mind, the narrator, the chatter, who's chatting? Can we give ourselves the space to suss out the different tone, the different quality, the different pacing, tenor of these voices? as a way of being able to discern who's reliable, who's trustworthy, where is the wisdom, and where is the habit? Where is the neurotic habit that no longer serves? Where is the voice of the child that developed a strategy to survive that could do with a break? What voice needs to the volume turned up? What voice in the head needs the volume turned down? Just taking a minute or two. To both kind of acknowledge perhaps whatever committee member showed up. This is part of the neighborhood, yeah. And then in closing to also say goodbye. Thanks for showing up. To give thanks to however the part that was able to participate in this, I acknowledge for that inner work, that challenge, giving thanks, coming back into the body, feeling the sit bones where your feet are. It's helpful to kind of shake out or move the shoulders, kind of come back into the body, let that go. And we'll stop here. So just to thank you again for your kind attention and staying with me through all that. That was a lot of me talking. So thanks so much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.